This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by panorama and then our feature of development and the economy. Today we shall close with a gospel reflection by Father Enobong Udjaidong. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The Vatican has announced that Pope Francis is not feeling too well. A statement from the Holy See Press Office on Thursday evening said that the Pope is affected by bronchitis, for which reason most of his activities in the coming days will be conducted at his Santa Marta residence at the Vatican. The Holy See Press Office statement to journalists said that due to bronchitis that he is experiencing these days, and in order to continue his activities on Friday, February 7th and Saturday, February 8th, the audiences of Pope Francis will be held at Casa Santa Marta. The Holy Father also held his scheduled audiences on Thursday morning at the same residence in the Vatican, instead of at the Apostolic Palace. And as he continues to work, even as he recuperates from bronchitis, Pope Francis on Friday received letters of credence from the new Holy See Ambassador of Kazakhstan, Timur Primbetov. Ambassador Primbetov was born on 17 September 1973. He is a married family man with one child and a graduate of the Kazakh State National University. Since his graduation, the new ambassador has held a number of government responsibilities, including as secretary for the country's Department for Europe and the Americas, and as ambassador in a number of countries that include the Russian Federation, Lithuania, and Mexico. Also on Friday morning, Pope Francis received in audience a delegation of the Talitha Kum, a Catholic network of religious sisters dedicated to combating human trafficking through prevention, advocacy, and survivor support. The encounter came on the eve of the 11th International Day of Prayer and Awareness Against Human Trafficking, which is marked on 8th February, the feast of St. Josephine Bakita, who herself was a victim of human trafficking. We must not tolerate the shameful exploitation of so many of our sisters and brothers. Trafficking in human bodies, the sexual exploitation even of small children, and forced labor are a disgrace and a very serious violation of fundamental human rights. Pope Francis remarked in his address to the delegation of the Talitha Kum. The Holy Father recalled the fact that the 11th International Day of Prayer and Awareness Against Human Trafficking, which takes place this Saturday, falls on the eve of the feast of St. Josephine Bakita, a victim of this terrible social scourge. St. Bakita's story, the Pope underscored, gives us strength and shows us that with the Lord's grace, it is possible for those who suffered injustice and violence to shatter their chains, to go free and to become messengers of hope to others in difficult situations. He decried human trafficking as a global phenomenon that claims millions of victims and continues unabated. And ahead of the International Day of Prayer and Awareness Against Human Trafficking, Pope Francis is urging Catholics and all the people of goodwill to do their part in order to combat the exploitation of vulnerable people. Devin Watkins has this report.
In his message released on Friday, the Pope noted that the day takes place on the liturgical memorial of St. Josephine Bakita, a Sudanese woman who fell victim to human trafficking as a child and then later became a nun. As the Jubilee focuses the Church on the theme of hope, he said, we must also ask ourselves how we can nourish that hope for the millions of people who are trapped in modern slavery. Where, he asked, do we get the new impetus to combat the trade in human organs and tissues, the sexual exploitation of children and girls, and forced labor, including prostitution, drugs, and arm trafficking? Christ, responded the Pope, provides the only true source of hope and strength for its victims and for those who seek to combat the scourge. With the help of God, he said, we can avoid becoming accustomed to injustice and ward off the temptation to think that certain phenomena cannot be eradicated. Each person, he added, must work in their own way to oppose the economic and criminal mechanisms that profit from the sufferings of others. Jesus teaches us that listening and compassion are essential to helping human trafficking survivors to get back on their feet, he said, noting that many of the most forceful opponents of trafficking are those who were once its victims. Trafficking, he said, is a complex, constantly evolving phenomenon and is fueled by wars, conflicts, famine, and the consequences of climate change. Responses to human trafficking, noted the Pope, must focus on united global efforts, especially under the coordination of international organizations. In conclusion, Pope Francis invited those working to combat human trafficking to entrust their efforts to the intercession of St. Josephine Baquita. Together, he said, we can create the conditions for trafficking and exploitation to be banned and for respect for fundamental human rights to prevail in fraternal recognition of our common humanity. I'm Devin Watkins.
Reports from the Vatican late on Thursday afternoon said that Pope Francis has extended the terms of office for Cardinals Giovanni Battista Re as Dean of Cardinals and for Cardinal Leonardo Sandri as Vice Dean. He has also added Robert Prevost to the number of cardinal bishops, assigning him the title of the Subabicarian Church of Albano. Nearly 3,000 people have been killed in the city of Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, according to the United Nations, after it was captured by rebels following days of fierce fighting with the Congolese army. The country of more than 100 million people has experienced decades of violence driven by ethnic tensions and fights over access to land and mineral resources, causing one of the world's largest humanitarian crises. Diplomatic and faith-based initiatives to stop this latest heavy fighting in the country is met with increasing concern for a possible expanded regional conflict fueled by interest in Congolese mineral wealth. Linda Bodoni has this report.
The rally in Goma's city stadium was part of the efforts by the M23 rebels to shore up public support amid growing international pressure after reports have emerged that almost 3,000 people were killed in clashes between the rebels and the Congolese forces. Meanwhile, after claiming Goma last week, and despite the announcement of a ceasefire on humanitarian grounds, the rebels on Wednesday also took control of the mining town of Niabibwe, not far from the capital of South Kivu, Bukavu. The deadly fighting has also caused a severe humanitarian crisis situation, drawing the attention of the International Criminal Court. The M23 rebels, backed by some 4,000 troops from neighbouring Rwanda, are the most powerful of the more than 100 armed groups active in Congo's east, which holds vast mineral deposits that are critical to much of the world's technology. On a diplomatic level, DR Congo President Felix Tshisekedi is scheduled to participate in a joint summit of Eastern and Southern African leaders in Tanzania on the 7th and 8th of February, in a drive to find a solution to the conflict that has, in fact, been festering for decades. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame is also expected to attend. Concerned and horrified by the increasing levels of violence, local peace initiatives are multiplying, including one by the Catholic and Protestant churches in DRC, who met with the president and presented a crisis exit plan. Since the flare-up of fighting and the rebel advance in eastern DRC, Pope Francis has used every possible occasion to ask for prayers for the people of Goma and South Kivu and urge for a mediated solution to the violence. I'm Linda Bordoni.
You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The World Health Organization warned on Friday that conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo has multiplied the risk of the spread of diseases, including cholera, malaria, tuberculosis, and the deadly mpox virus. Fighting between Rwandan-backed M23 rebels and Congolese armed forces has exacerbated an already dire situation for millions of people, said Dr. Burema Hama Sambo, WHO representative for the DRC. The World Health Agency reported 600 suspected cholera cases and 14 deaths in the last month in the North Kivu province, where disrupted water supplies have heightened the risk of the spread of the disease. The fighting has also affected the WHO's vaccine rollout for the mpox virus in that part of the country. Dr. Sambo said 90% of mpox patients in isolation units in Goma had to flee and vaccination programs were paused for 10 days. In related news, UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk said on Friday that the worst could be ahead in the escalating crisis in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Speaking at an emergency meeting in Geneva, Mr. Turk said he expected sexual violence, including incidents of rape and sexual slavery, to increase if nothing is done to address the crisis. The emergency meeting of the UN Human Rights Council was called by the Democratic Republic of Congo to investigate massive human rights violations it blames on the M23 rebels. Meanwhile, in Tanzania, a joint two-day summit of Eastern and Southern African leaders to discuss the conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo opened on Friday. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa delivered his annual State of the Nation address on Thursday, promising that the government will launch a second wave of reforms to try to lift economic growth above 3%. Mr. Ramaphosa also said his country will not be bullied. His comments came days after U.S. President Donald Trump said he'll cut off funding to South Africa over a Land Reform Act. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
This is Development and the Economy. Welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. On 10th and 11th February 2025, France will host the Artificial Intelligence Action Summit. The gathering at the Grand Palais will bring together heads of state and government, leaders of international organizations, chief executive officers of small and large companies, representatives of academia, non-governmental organizations, artists, and members of civil society. This Artificial Intelligence Action Summit aims to collectively establish scientific foundations, solutions, and standards for more sustainable artificial intelligence working for collective progress and in the public interest. Co-chaired with India, the event builds on the advances made at the Bletchley Park Summit in November 2023 and the Seoul Summit in May 2024, and will draw on the expertise of a steering committee bringing together some 30 countries and international institutions in order to ensure inclusive and diverse contributions. The summit, together with the Artificial Intelligence Action Week, will be an important opportunity to showcase ecosystems fostering the development and deployment of artificial intelligence and to promote concrete initiatives by a wide range of actors who contribute to this collective effort. It is hoped that the international community may be able to effectively put in place the ethical and practical guidelines proposed by the UNESCO and others about the fact that artificial intelligence has the potential to be at the service of an educator's toolkit. In short, to be at the service of education. This is in spite of the fact that the introduction of artificial intelligence technology is just one part of a much wider philosophical discussion about the effectiveness of education in general in a world that many believe is about to be overwhelmed by increasingly powerful artificial intelligence-powered applications. Matthew Raskoff is Deputy Director for Digital Education at Stanford University, one of the world's foremost educational institutions with a vibrant intellectual community that pushes the boundaries of knowledge. Speaking with Conor Lennon from the United Nations News, Raskoff tries to explain the place of education in today's artificial intelligence world.
I mean, that's a contested question. I think part of the reason why it's hard to build technology in support of education is because there are so many different visions for what that looks like. And I would say, you know, sitting here in the United Nations, there are significant cultural differences among countries, languages, backgrounds, and the values of education are largely embedded in nations and cultures and heritage. So I wouldn't presume to say the answer for others. What I would represent, though, are a set of educational values and the idea that educators should be determining the way that teaching and learning works in their own classrooms, and they should not be subject entirely to the whims of technology and to the products that are built by engineers without necessarily respecting those educational values. So whatever those values are, I think they deserve to be designed for, to be supported, to be built for in their own cultural context.
Do you feel that's happening? Do you feel that that certain biases by engineers are influencing education in a way that's not necessarily helpful?
I think that's right, yeah. I mean, the most advanced areas of AI development are not actually in language, they're in programming. So programming has been most radically disrupted among all the skills. And, tools like Cursor AI are fundamentally changing the way programming is changing. And I think there's this kind of lazy extrapolation that says that other fields are going to look like this field that I know best. It's sometimes the phenomenon of like scratching your own itch. If you're an engineer, building tools for other engineers, designing products for the kind of learner that you were, you end up with a somewhat myopic view that doesn't necessarily take into account other needs, other learners, other modalities that you might have missed out on in your own education. And there's a need for, I would say, greater discovery, greater empathy, and a widening of the aperture with respect to educational goals and needs.
Well, I mean, one of the aims of education, I suppose, is to help people to get jobs, and many of the early stage jobs in particular that people get, that I got, that maybe you got when you first left education, are going to be going soon.
Definitely.
And I was looking the other day at a friend of mine started a company, and they're offering AI staff members.
Yeah.
So it's obviously cheaper. Probably they won't complain. They won't take a lunch break.
Yeah.
And they're cheap
right.
compared to people as well. So I guess I'm asking, what then is the added value of humans?
Yeah, I think one of the most basic questions that's being asked right now. I think it depends very much on the industry. It depends very much on the context. And the value is probably going to decrease in some parts of the economy, but it's also probably going to increase in other parts of the economy. The idea of human in the loop is that humans plus machines are probably going to replace fully human processes, but they might not themselves be replaced by fully automated processes. They might be able to circumvent full automation with some better combination. I would give an example of this research that's led by professor of engineering at Stanford, Chelsea Finn, who is integrating robotics and large language models to allow factory workers to reprogram the robots on the factory line. So oftentimes, a robot will face some challenge, a robotic arm, there's some mistake, it's not getting something quite right. And in what might typically be a request that goes back to the engineering department and headquarters to redo something can now be something that a non-engineer who's working on a factory line can themselves fix and reprogram and get the line going faster. So the robot may not be able to fix itself, but a human who can communicate with it in English, not necessarily having to know the robotic programming language, can basically tell it what it needs to do, and the human and the machine can work together more effectively. Some interactions like that will likely preserve factory roles. The roles will change, obviously, but that grants more agency to the humans. That's probably a better job, to be on the factory line rather than waiting, for somebody else to fix the problem. You now have control to work more effectively with the machine. That, to me, might be a model for preserving certain kinds of work.
So on balance, then, would you describe yourself as more of a doomer or a booster?
I would say when I'm among the boosters, I'm a doomer. And when I'm among a doomer, I'm a booster. That makes me a contrarian.
Matthew Raskoff, Deputy Director for Digital Education at Stanford University, speaking there with Conor Lennon about the place of education in today's artificial intelligence-enabled world. And that is all we have time for in this edition of Development and the Economy. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
Coming up next, a reflection on this Sunday's readings, prepared and presented by Father Enobong Udaidyong.
This Sunday, the readings are specially dedicated to our vocations in life. It is quite interesting to know that no one can serve God without first being called by Him. It is also interesting to know that we all have been called by God to serve Him, but each is called in a different way to offer service to God and His people. Some are called to be prophets, some are called to be leaders of government, some are called to be priests, some are called to be teachers, and the list continues. In all this, we are all servants of God, and as God's servants, there have to be those distinguishing qualities that must be associated with us. In the first reading taken from the book of Isaiah, we see the call of the prophet Isaiah, a man of unclean lips, who dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. God called him despite his state. In order to make him fit for the work, God purified him and forgave his guilt. Having been purified, the prophet in his new status heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" He responded without hesitation, "Here I am, send me." The prophet was not called because he was the best. God prepares and equips those he calls. St. Paul in the second reading gives an account of his call to discipleship. The story of the conversion of Paul is a story of the grace and mercy of God. The once persecutor of Christians become a prominent apostle of the way. He attested that he was never fit to be called an apostle because of his past, but by the grace of God, he became who he was. In the gospel, we see a repeat of the unworthiness of those called. When Peter with his companions, James and John, after playing host to Christ in their boat, were called to become fishers of men. No one is worthy to be the servant of God. No prophet in the Old Testament was worthy. None of the apostles of Christ was worthy, and none even after them is worthy. No priest or bishop is called because he is worthy. It becomes then very important that those who are called be humble, because they were not called due to their worthiness or because they were the best. The unique thing about those called is that they are called to make a difference in the society. We are called because God has so prepared us by endowing us with the grace and charisms for the mission. We are called specially by God to fulfill the vocation which we are currently doing. Vocation is service. It is an invitation to contribute meaningfully to the plans of God. Hence, we talk of different vocations in life. In vocation, we have to let go of the unproductive past in order to contribute to the future of a people. If then, what are you doing does not serve this purpose, then there must be a change. The readings of the Sunday invite us to reflect on the love and the grace of God in our lives and the vocation we are called to accomplish in His name. What is your vocation? Are you a father? Are you a mother? Are you a teacher? Are you a preacher? Are you a priest? Are you a doctor? Are you a nurse? Are you a ruler? Whoever we are in life, let us ask ourselves, have we contributed meaningfully to the plans of God for His people? Do we look down on others and take undue advantage of them, or do we respect them and appreciate their useful contributions even though they are our subordinates? Are we appreciative of the grace of God in our life as Paul and others did, and so be humble? Let us remember that anyone called need not be the best, but God chooses the weak to shame the strong. Those He calls and chooses, He prepares them for the mission. Therefore, are we ready to respond like Isaiah did, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? Let us pray for the grace to be humble and for a good disposition to effectively serve God in our chosen vocations in life. May the message of Christ in all its richness continue to find a home in our hearts through the same Christ, our Lord. Amen. Peace be with you.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb, Jesus.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.